Welcome to Cape Town and to the 38th World Conference of the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease. As usual, we start the conference with a day that describes the progress of the Stop TB partnership. And you can imagine that this year's program today will be devoted mainly to very urgent issues such as MDR, XDR, TB, TB, HIV, and obviously also the progress of the different working groups of the partnership. I would like, on a personal note, say that obviously MDR and XDR-TB are very important issues, but I have the impression that we are forgetting basic TB control. It's important that we organize TB control properly to avoid additional MDR or XDR-TB cases. So I hope that during these discussions, not only today, but during the conference, we really respect good, simple, well-managed TB control to avoid all those difficult MDR and XDR-TB cases. I'm very pleased to say that this year's conference is gathering almost 3,000 people, and we have a lot of health activists that are also participating. I think it's important that we not only talk among scientists, researchers, program managers, but also include the communities in our work, because they can really assist us a lot, push us to do better work. I would like to introduce our chair today, Rick O'Brien. He will be chairing the session after the introductory remarks. And I would like now to call on Mauro Raviglione, who will be talking about MDR-TB and TB-HIV global policy highlights.
Many thanks, Nils, and dear colleagues. It's a real pleasure to be here in Cape Town in South Africa for this year series of events linked to the Union Conference. I wonder if my slides are ready, because I had a little technical problem. If not, then I will just speak without slides. Are the slides ready? I have 5 slides. Well, if they come, I will use them. What I wanted to do is simply remind everyone, as Nils already did, of the importance of thinking that despite the fact that XDR-TB and MDR-TB are dominating internationally the media scene, etc., the problem with TB control still is in the implementation of a proper basic essential components of the what we call the Stop TB strategy today. I have the slides now. So, first of all, let me remind everyone about the global burden we are all facing. We are talking about 8.8 million cases of TB every year and 1.6 million deaths. And those who count know that this is 4,500 deaths every day for a disease that is curable. And as you see there in the map, if you can see it, the highest rates are in this continent, the rate per capita. We are talking about 400,000 or so multidrug-resistant TB cases, and 116,000 of those fatal every year. We are talking about perhaps something around 27,000 XDR-TB cases, majority of which are, of course, fatal today. And finally, we are talking about 630,000 HIV-associated tuberculosis cases, of whom 200,000 are actually fatal. So it's a huge burden that we are all facing. And when I was talking about the Stop TB strategy as the way we think, the international community thinks, that the epidemic has to be faced, we are talking about the 6 components, starting with the high-quality DOTS expansion and enhancement. And to remind everyone, DOTS is not just supervision of treatment. It's all the 5 elements that you see there. political commitment, case detection through quality assured bacteriology that today cannot be limited to smear microscopy, although that remains essential, standardized treatment with supervision and patient support, and I insist on the patient support part, because I know that this is a contentious issue, but without education, without counseling and constant support to patients, we are going to go nowhere. An effective drug supply and management system and monitoring and evaluation. And then you see the other components that we have added with the experience of the years. First, address TB-HIV and MDR-TB, and I will talk specifically about that in the next two slides. Contribute to health system strengthening, engaging all care providers, because it's more and more well known that in many parts of the world, non-program providers are effectively providing care. Empower people with TB and community, and I'm very, very satisfied to see, probably for the first time, a very active participation of communities and activism in this particular conference in Cape Town. And I know that there is plenty of event during the week, reminding us that without, Nils already mentioned that, without community participation, again, we are going to go nowhere. It is essential. And finally, enabling and promoting research. A lot of emphasis has been put on the issue of new tools in the past few years. And my judgment on that is that without new tools, we will not be able to eliminate tuberculosis. We may contain it in many parts of the world. We may even push the incidence down in many parts of the world. But in order to eliminate TB, we will need new tools. And now I want to focus on this particular component, which is the topic of today, just to show you the policies. This is the global policy on MDR and XDR-TB. I'm not going to waste a lot of time on the slide because it will be detailed during the day. But these are the various components of the way we should respond to M and XDR tuberculosis. And as you see, the first one, and this is by consensus of a task force that met a year ago to face this epidemic of XDR, the first one again insists on the basic TB and HIV control measures to avoid the creation of drug resistance. But then you also have the patients with drug resistance that are dying today and not in 10 years. And those are the ones that are addressed with the second bullet there, scaling up the programmatic management of MDR and XDR-TB. Third, and I want just to emphasize this one, strengthen laboratory services. This is, I think, is the top priority that we all have to face because it's the Achillean heel of TB control today. And if we don't address laboratories properly, we are not going anywhere in the era of TB-HIV and drug-resistant TB. And then all the other measures, including infection control, strengthening advocacy, resource mobilization, promoting research. Policy has been outlined in a number of documents that as WHO and partnership, Stop TB partnership, we have essentially produced over the past few years. You will hear about those. When it comes to TB-HIV, we have a 12-bullet policy that has been published already 3-4 years ago, establishing mechanism for collaboration between TB and HIV control programs, conduct surveillance, etc., as you see there. We will talk extensively about it today. Decreasing the burden of TB in patients living with HIV and decreasing the burden of HIV in patients with tuberculosis. And there are measures that are there today. We don't have to wait for new tools for some of these measures. No, let me talk about preventive therapy, for instance, as a measure that could be put in place. Does not depend largely from TB programs. It depends on primary care. It depends on HIV, antiretroviral programs, and other programs providing care to HIV-positive people. If we don't manage to push the notion of preventive therapy, again, we are not going to have this measure that is potentially saving lives in the thousands. We cannot actually achieve what we want to achieve. Documents have been produced, as you see on the left side there, over the past few years. So, before going to the next sort of more provoking slide, I want to say that in terms of policies, I think we are pretty clear these days what needs to be done to prevent and to manage both TB-HIV and XDR-TB. But the problem is this one, and I just wanted to provoke you a bit. This is what I saw in Swaziland in August of 2007. I'm not pointing the finger to Swaziland at all, because it's a country that I particularly like, and I went back 20 years after having been there as a fellow at the time, 20 years ago, in a primary care clinic in a mission. And they brought me to visit, they took me to visit, this woman that was affected by MDR-TB, probably XDR-TB, not yet known, that was living in the bush. About 20 minutes of a 4x4 vehicle road from the mission, which is about 25 kilometers of tar road from the main road in Swaziland. So I guess that this is valid in many parts of Africa, particularly in this continent, where people live in, like that, dispersed in the bush. There was no governmental service. But the lady was there, living in a tent provided by the Red Cross, because her, you know, hut, as you see on the left, had been destroyed a few months before. The problem is, how do we get access, you know, to this type of people, and how our global policies, and, you know, that I have no scientific reason to believe today are not valid, how do we get the global policies into practice? This is how she was getting her capromycin, I believe it was, injection, and how she was getting her drugs with the nurse that was visiting her on a daily basis. Unfortunately, this is me looking at her, but unfortunately, this lady was so sick that 1 month later, according to the sister that wrote to me in an email, died. So the big challenge, and I want to conclude with this notion, the big challenge is we have the policies, we can always perfect them, we can always make them better, we can always add more scientific evidence, but the main policies are there, and the question is, how do we get these policies into practice in situations like this one? And if we answer this question, I think we will be a very good step ahead in our efforts to control TB in this continent particularly. And with that, I leave you now with our WHO representative in the office of Pretoria, South Africa, Dr. Stella Nyangwe, who will be giving introductory remarks to today. Thank you very much.
Distinguished delegates, all protocols observed, good morning. Permit me, as the World Health Organization representative to South Africa, to welcome you all to this important event on behalf of WHO and indeed on my own behalf. You couldn't have selected a better host country for this global scientific meeting on TB, and we are all most grateful to the Republic of South Africa for accepting to host this meeting. As we all know, the theme for this year's meeting of the International Union Against Lung Disease and TB is Confronting the Challenges of HIV and MDR in TB Prevention and Care, while the theme for today's symposium, coordinated by WHO, is XDR-TB and TB-HIV, a threat or opportunity for TB control? It's a question. The selection of the theme for the symposium could not have been more appropriate. Drug-resistant TB and HIV and AIDS are matters of significant public health concern in the countries of this sub-region and particularly in South Africa. It is my hope that this symposium will be more than just another informal mingling of scientific minds, but it will be a forum deliberating its resolve to transform experiences and research findings into policy and good practices in this continent and beyond. Ladies and gentlemen, I have been requested to talk about WHO's contribution to policy transfer at country level. Let me state by observing that the mandate of the World Health Organization, as you all know, derives from the stated and perceived needs of member states. Governments, as we know, generally have the responsibility of the well-being of their populations at heart. Thus, the World Health Organization is mandated by member states to set goals, global health goals, targets and standards, and Mario has shown us very well how this is done, and consequently to support the development and implementation of policy decisions consistent with these goals, targets, and standards. In addition to this, WHO supports member states in monitoring and evaluating the impact of interventions implemented on the basis of policy decisions on the health of their populations. We all also know that problem identification is a social construct. We know that the web of causation is paramount to disease prevention and control efforts. Most importantly, we all know that national ownership is central to successful health initiatives. Experiences abound where even the best of policies and interventions fail when the climate is not right, and ownership and relevance are some of the ingredients to that facilitative climate. The World Health Organization seeks first and foremost the highest possible level of health for all people, within the limitations of the existing social and other determinants of health. Challenges and opportunities exist side by side, and the wisdom is to identify the one without prejudicing the other. To facilitate policy transfer at country level, if we could go back to this, the World Health Organization proposes general principles that need to be adapted to each country's specificities, as application must necessarily vary. What works in one place may not work as well or at all in another place. In order to maximize possibilities for implementation of effective health policies to impact positively on health outcomes, the World Health Organization worldwide, and in particular in the Africa region, has prioritized the WHO technical support to countries. WHO Afro has established inter-country support teams to serve as a specified number of countries in each sub-region, and we have our sub-regions as Western, Central, East and Southern Africa, thus providing a more decentralized system of support. Country offices, WHO country offices that is, have also been reprofiled so that the competencies of their staff are more in synchrony with the country's needs, health needs and priorities. Other strategies that the World Health Organization and its regional offices have adopted to promote policy transfer at country level include the following: prioritization of the strengthening of health policy formulation, strengthening of health systems for improved health service delivery, promotion of the scale-up of essential interventions that have the most impact on people's health, enhancing the response to key determinants of health, and strengthening and expanding partnerships for health. And this meeting is just an example of that. Distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, the epidemics of drug-resistant tuberculosis and the TB and HIV co-infection are stated public health concerns of the Ministers of Health of the Africa region, and our host country, South Africa, is one of the countries facing these epidemics. In fact, during the last two WHO regional committees of Ministers of Health, they did decide to declare the year 2006 as the year for accelerating HIV prevention, and also declared that tuberculosis be considered an epidemic. I have a few pins that we brought here from the regional office, and the pins that some of you might get because we don't have more than 300 of them shows Africa as supposed to be the center for the prevention of not only HIV but tuberculosis. I am sure that during this conference, you will hear about the rates of MDR and XDR-TB that the countries in this region have to contend with. WHO is working with each member state to develop, implement, and evaluate interventions for addressing the epidemics in order to continuously review and update both political and technical policies. Dr. Raviglione has just shared with us the normative function of WHO in global health. By convening world experts, WHO encourages information sharing that generates global guidance on priority health problems based on the latest available evidence. Direct technical support to countries is essential for the enhancement of policy transfer. Global guidance is crucial, but local adaptation and translation into national policy is required before implementation. This is possible through the day-to-day technical assistance that the World Health Organization provides to countries in collaboration with other partners. Countries must be helped to build functional health systems, emphasizing community involvement and district health strengthening, introduction of appropriate technologies, sourcing of essential medicines, and development of human resources for health. Promotion of good policies without equal zeal to help countries secure the requisite tools and commodities for their implementation is most unhelpful. The matching of scientific evidence and the provision of basic medicines and tools have made possible the implementation of sound TB control programs that consist of all aspects of modern TB control, including TB-HIV interventions, management of drug-resistant TB, and infection control. However, the widespread inadequate availability of second-line anti-TB medicines and the lack of local capacity to detect XDR-TB are two of the key challenges for drug-resistant tuberculosis control in this region. WHO and its collaborating partners, therefore, will endeavor to do the utmost to support capacity to enhance the successful transfer of global public health policy at country level. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished delegates, I am convinced that the entire conference and this symposium in particular will be crucial in building the necessary synergy to use the sharing of best practices and the emerging evidence from all over the world to scale up the replication of success stories. I wish you all very fruitful deliberations for the rest of the symposium, and once again, welcome to our beautiful mother city, Cape Town. In our local language here, I will say to you, Ndia namkela nonke, which means welcome to you all, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Onyangwe, and good morning, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here with you in Cape Town, and I would like to thank the partnership and the organizers of the symposium for the invitation to chair the morning session. I would ask the speakers this morning to do their best to stay within the allotted time, so we do have time for questions and comments following the talks. Now I'd like to call on Dr. Marcos Espinal from the Stop TB Partnership, who will update us on the progress of the partnership working groups. Marcos?
Thank you, Rick. Good morning, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I want to thank every one of you for attending this symposium. I also want to thank the International Union Against TB and Lung Diseases, the Union, for every year hosting this type of events and making life easy for the Stop TB partnership, basically. What I'd like to do is just to give you a brief overview of the progress achieved by the seven working groups of the Stop TB Partnership. And let me thank the chairs and the secretariats of each working group for providing the slides and information. I'm just simply a convener here or your servant, as I define my job. In trying to keep the partnership flying high, but flying high with all of you. So that's the main reason I thank you for coming to this symposium. Let me just show you the structure of the Stop TB partnership. So in the context of the presentation of the progress of the working groups, we can move on. There are three implementation working groups, DOTS expansion, TB-HIV, MDR-TB, and three research and development working groups for developing of new vaccines, new diagnostics, and new drugs. And there is a cross-cutting working group, advocacy, communication, and social mobilization. Every working group has a chair and a secretariat, and they all, and this is where the partners engage, basically. The working groups are forums for the partners to put questions, to discuss progress achieved, and to discuss how to move forward the agenda if we want to reach the Millennium Development Goals and the partnership targets, and if we want eventually eliminate TB as a public health problem. If I move on with starting with DOTS expansion, which we call the model of all working groups, I like to use these slides from the 2002 report of WHO, when actually showing data from the previous 5 years before the Stop TB partnership. As you can see, the line there, I don't have a pointer. They said they would have a pointer, yes. Okay. You can see the line there that the red dots is the data, and at that time in 2002, WHO was estimating that case detection target was going to be reached in 2013. So we needed to shift the line in order to achieve the 2005 targets. And this is one of the reasons the Stop TB partnership was launched and created in 2001, started in 1998 as an initiative, launching the IOTLD conference in Bangkok, and then became a partnership. And the working group on DOTS expansion was convening the 22 managers of the countries, highest burden countries in the world, and delivering a message that they needed to step up in order to ensure the cases were detected. So that was the picture in 2002, very, very ugly picture, that reaching 70% case detection was 2013. When we move on and now we see the 5 years after the partnership, we can see we have been able to switch the line, and now we are almost there. 62%, I think, is the current number on case detection. We need to get to the red line, 70%. But I think it's pretty good that the efforts that has been made in the past 5 years by all of you, and mainly by the countries, it's outstanding to recognize that. And now we're proud to say that 62% of the cases are detected. So it doesn't look like it's going to be 2013, but earlier. Another achievement of the DOTS expansion working group and the technical partners is ensuring that the Global Fund provides the funding to countries. As you can see here in the red line is the success rate of TB proposals to the Global Fund. In blue is the success rate of all proposals, including HIV and malaria. As you can see, in the last 2 years, the Working Group on DOTS expansion through the TB team, a coalition of technical partners in which WHO, the Union, KNCB, GLRA, and many other partners are part of it, assisting countries to develop proposals, and the evidence is there. 50% and 62% rate of approval for TB, and that's something you all should be proud of, it because it's the credit to all of you, basically. When you look at performance of the grants, also the technical assistance, and let me highlight the issue of technical assistance, because our partners need the funding for the technical assistance, and the countries demand technical assistance, and technical assistance costs money, there's no doubt. So I just wanted to put that message in the table. When you look at the green, the red bar, you can see that the TB grants are the best performer. 16% only in category B, 2, and C. Basically, these are the categories that that shows that these are the grants that has been not, that are not working, or basically are not doing very well. And when you look at Category 8, 33% of the TB grants are doing very well compared to HIV/AIDS and malaria. That to me is very clear of the value added of technical assistance and the partners that are sitting here today, and also the countries doing their best and the national TB program managers, which I pay tribute because they are in the hot chair in their own countries. In summary, we are at the level of 62%, case detection, treatment success 84.5%, I think. Public-private mix has been scaled up in several countries, and that's something that continues to need to be scaled up. And several other achievements there that I'm not going to go into details. We have a planning and budgeting tool that has been developed by the WHO Monitoring and Evaluation Unit that is to help countries to plan in line with the global plan to stop TB, and I believe Catherine Floyd is going to talk about that. But the future, still we need to continue working hard, and we need to continue providing technical assistance. The working group has several challenges like laboratory strengthening, involving communities, and monitoring and evaluation, which is one of the key areas. And we need to improve monitoring and evaluation because it's probably one of the best, but it's not yet there as it should be. These are some of the planned activities of the working group. When we move on to TB-HIV working group, we can see here HIV testing among TB patients has increased major. How can I use it? You see, technology is always. I better not use this. So you can see that the testing for HIV among TB patients has increased hugely in the last year or so. Patients on antiretrovirals also, but it's very low still. I mean, when you see TB patients in antiretrovirals, so we have a lot to do. And we have a lot to do in engaging the HIV/AIDS community. Because the problem of HIV, TB-HIV is two communities and only one patient, as someone said a few years ago. So if we don't engage the HIV/AIDS community, then we're not going to get there. I think we have a huge challenge on the TB-HIV, but progress has been made, and we need to continue pushing and pushing. Some of the achievements, it says planned activities, but it's wrong. In the last couple of years, we have seen several African countries increasing their efforts on TB and HIV. Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, Zambia are examples. Also internationally, the visibility, the Toronto meeting, the Sydney meeting of the IA, International AIDS Society, slowly. And I put a challenge here. We need to try to take over in Mexico, which is next year, I think, for the IAS conference. And also UNGAS, we need to ensure that TB is highly profiled at the UNGAS meeting next year, or Millennium Development Goals ahead of State Summit that is going to take place in New York. So major challenges, increasing funding also. And here are some of the planned activities that the working group has decided to focus and see. Monitoring and evaluation is always there because it's an area that needs to be developed further. Engaging the civil society, NGOs that work in HIV, there are plenty of them working on HIV. And this is one of the other reasons that the partnership launched this year, the Civil Society Challenge Facility. We're funding now, for the first time, we provided funding to 22 NGOs in the field to try to help to move forward the agenda at country level. NDR-TB, and there is come the conundrum and the other major challenge. And I'm not going to go into details because this issue has been discussed already several times throughout the last 2-3 days in several symposiums. And you know, there was a global response plan launched by the working group and WHO. There has been an updated research agenda. The Green Light Committee has been reformed, but the Green Light Committee, of course, is always an area for discussion and the Global Drug Facility. I think a good thing to say is that we just completed an agreement, hopefully, to be signed with the Global Fund and UNITAID and Global Drug Facility and GLC to try to scale up further the access to treatment for NDR-TB in countries in need. And I just heard that the agreement might be signed actually today or yesterday by the Global Fund. The key issue and the key challenge for this working group is to scale up and for the countries to scale up. And I'm just going to say, you know, it's a huge conundrum. It's not an easy, it's a very complex issue because there is the Green Light Committee, there is the Global Drug Facility, there is the Essential Drug Medicine of WHO, there is the political will at country level to do this. I just heard of a country who kept second-line drugs that were provided through the GLC, I think, for 6 months in customs. Is that political will? No. I'm sorry. I need to be blunt. So it's a complex situation involving countries, involving multilaterals, involving stakeholders. But I think political will, it's an issue, and drug registration is another issue. ACSM, I'm just going to highlight a few issues, and I'm not going to spend too much time, because ACSM is basically a new working group only a couple of years ago. ACSM is also one of the core areas of the Secretariat of the Stop TB Partnership, and there's some development there, but I just wanted to highlight there's some photos here of some of the efforts that the partners are doing related to ACSM. You can see here, for instance, UN Special Envoy of Secretary General meeting former Secretary General and the new Secretary General, and Jorge Sampaio is doing a great job out there for us and for all of you, basically. See, you see the coordinating board of the Stop TB Partnership meeting President Obasanjo in Nigeria, and the launch of the global plan by Bill Gates and Obasanjo and today Prime Minister of the UK. So I think the visibility has been raised. Movement is already there, but we still need to do much better. And personally, I think one of the future of the Stop TB Partnership is to enhance advocacy, communication and social mobilization, and also to enhance partnership building. Some of the plan activities, we need to support very strongly all the working groups that are developing new tools, that are implementing current tools, and we need to further integrate ACSN activities in support of TB control programs, because now we're getting money from the Global Fund for ACSM activities at country level, and our NTP managers are saying we need the technical assistance, we need to ensure this money is wisely used. It's not only about World TB Day, it should be about the whole year. Now, if I move on to working groups on new tools, this is the new TB diagnostics working group. The three of them develop strategic plans for 2006-2015, and I must say that the new tools are the ones that are going to allow us to eliminate TB. There's no doubt. And we need to support the new tool development, and we need to advocate strongly for new tool development, and we need to support what the working groups are doing, because they're going to deliver. Otherwise, we will put them in the hot chair if they don't deliver. I'm sure they will deliver. And the partners are the ones to deliver, basically, because we need new tools. Major progress, and I believe Rick O'Brien already yesterday was presenting something about new diagnostics coming soon. I think today also that we're going to be discussing this, so I'm not going to spend much time. These are some of the planned activities that they are going to do in the next 2 years, and we try to fund the working groups. The working groups are forums and consensus-building processes. So new drugs, you know, headed by the Global Alliance or chaired by the Global Alliance, and also the Working Group on Diagnostics chaired by FINE and Giorgio Rossigno, who is the CEO of FINE. And certainly we need new treatments. You all know that. And our role is to support those partners working in the development of new drugs. And you will hear about developing of new drugs throughout the conference, so I'm not going to go through that. But worth to highlight that 30 drugs apparently in 30 drugs or compounds in global pipeline as per the latest information we have, and this is very, very good news, but we need to do more, and we need to have more. Remember, not every compound that is in the pipeline will make it. Only few will make it. So we need to strengthen and enhance the pipeline. Some of the activities that they're planning to do, you know, like expand global pipeline, I just mentioned it, and assess the funds needed for clinical trial sites capacity building. Some of them are already entering into clinical trials. And let's see. Vaccines, and thanks to the working group for providing this, headed by Michel Greco, providing these slides, you know, apparent that you know, this is going to be the last one, but it's the vaccine, as you know, will do great impact if we are able to finally come up with the vaccine, probably the Holy Grail. And it looks good. 7 vaccines of 3 different types entering phase 1. It takes time. We know that. But let's keep supporting them. Some of the activities they would like to do as working group. I mean, let me just clarify, the working groups do not replace the work of the partners. The working groups are, again, for them. And this is just to finalize something that we need to all work on it, you know, introduction of new tools into the field. It's not going to be a process of one day, or here it is, the Holy Grail, and then just do it. No. It takes time, and the partnership has a task force on retooling or ensuring that we create a process to introduce the new tools, and the 7 working groups are part of that task force, and I believe Saidi Egwaga is going to talk about that and about progress. Now, I just wanted to finish with the partnership is being evaluated by McKinsey & Company. Is this the first comprehensive evaluation of the partnership, including the 6 years of the partnership. The partnership has 1 previous evaluation about processes, but now we're looking into what is the impact the STOP-TB partnership has exercised over TB control. I hope McKinsey is here, and if some of you, they're ready to talk to all of you, because I think McKinsey is now looking at here on the future of the working groups of the partnership. And I just wanted to put a question in the table, because the momentum has changed, and there are several subgroups out there. There are several task forces and things. And the question is, do we keep with these 7 working groups, or do we go that far? We have subgroup in TB and poverty. We have subgroup in laboratory strengthening. We have subgroup in childhood TB. We have subgroup in infection control. Do we go that far? Well, that's a question for all of you. If you're here, talk to McKinsey. McKinsey has been visiting all the working groups. I have my own personal opinion, but I will not mention it here because then I might bias you. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Marcus, for this nice comprehensive overview, a tremendous amount of work and ambitious plans of the working group. Because we are a bit behind, I want to defer any questions, particularly related to the controversial issue you just raised at the end about the future of the working groups and numbers to a later part of the symposium. With new diagnostics becoming available for programmatic implementation right now and additional diagnostic tests likely to come in the next few years, new drugs hopefully within the next several years and vaccines a bit later, I think the biggest challenge will be not so much in the technical development but the programmatic implementation and providing for access to patients who will benefit from these new technologies. And so now I'd like to call on Rosalind Villazon, who's NTP manager of the Philippines, and Saidi Egwaga, NTLP manager of Tanzania, to tell us about the work of the retooling task force.
Rosalind. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Allow me to speak on the task force on retooling, which was already partly touched earlier on by our first speaker, Dr. Espinal. So a background of why a task force retooling was created was the fact that presented earlier on, there was an estimated 1.6 million people who died of TB, plus, of course, the emerging challenges that we are faced with, such as MDR-TB, quite recently XDR-TB, and the thousands of deaths and cases arising from TB-HIV. We are also aware of the fact that as far as medicines in TB chemotherapy is concerned, these are more than 40 years old, and the treatment courses are still long, ranging from 6 to 9 months. And some of them really do generate drug resistance, especially if they are not given properly. Diagnostics, they are more than centuries old, and they are insensitive, especially in the presence of HIV co-infections. And vaccines are more than 85 years old, providing marginal protection for young, for the very young and infants. Having said that, the global plan to stop TB in 2015 provided us some lists of the new tools that are on the way or on the pipeline. This is just an estimate of how the stages of these drugs, diagnostics, and vaccines are recently, and you can see the various stages from product development to field trials. This was also presented earlier on, and it has been annually updated by the respective working groups on drugs, diagnostics, and vaccines. So I think we should look into the lessons that we have learned from the past, that there are communicable diseases such as hepatitis B and malaria who have shown some significant delays when they introduce their tools into the community, and that lesson should be learned also by the retooling task force in terms of introduction of these new tools. And therefore, it has been a big challenge to the community that both at global and national levels, we need to consider the timely adoption and introduction of these new tools as they become available, for which the board responded to such a situation by creating the so-called Task Force on Retooling in their coordinating board meeting in Abuja held April 2006. So what is retooling? It's defined simply as a process of preparing for the introduction, adoption, implementation of new and improved diagnostics, drugs, and vaccines in TB control once they are made available to us. And the goals of the retooling task force is a long list of goals, but you can see that it really needs some entailing some aspects of preparatory steps such as planning, creation of policies, clarifying processes so that we can move from the trial stage to policy stage, even to actual implementation in countries. It involves also a lot of advocacy. That's why we're looking into engagement of stakeholders, especially from high TB burden countries. And as I have said earlier on, try to learn from the disease communities when these tools were introduced by the malaria and by the hepatitis B diseases. And of course, we need to fast track these new tools both at the WHO level and at the national policy level, and link all these working groups together with the theme of retooling. The very first publication that was made by the retooling task force was entitled New Technologies for TB Control. It will be available in the one of the booths later on in the sessions, and tomorrow we're inviting you again for a forum on the discussion of this publication. It gives us a guide on how to provide a common framework to discuss the process of adopting, introducing, and implementing these new tools once they are made available to countries. It also gives us some key issues and guidance on what actions or appropriate steps to take once we try to go into the process of retooling. Now, the structure of the document is divided into two parts. The first part is composed of presents challenges in the retooling process, but also proposes some key steps on how to address such challenges, especially at country levels. And the second part is the technical and the operational part, which is attached to it are four annexes that looks into, one, an annex on an overview of the selected medicines, diagnostics, and vaccines, which was very first published in 2006. Annex 2 looks into a checklist of key actions for diagnostics, and it specifically discusses a generic checklist that was developed by the TB Diagnostics Group, specifically looking into a liquid media for culture and drug susceptibility testing. So this Annex 2 has been checklist has been distributed to experts and to several NTP managers, and their feedback have been incorporated so that further refinement has been made, and this will be finalized and disseminated later on. it's going to be a useful checklist, and it's envisioned that similar checklists will be used for each upcoming new technology once they are become available in countries. Annex 3 looks into a generic illustrative picture of the timelines for adoption and implementation. Looking, and in here you can see that there is really some degree of variation in terms of their stages of development and the timelines and the specific activities by which global and country levels should be looking at once they go into such process of retooling. And a second publication that is now being currently developed, which will be made hopefully available by 2008, is this Engaging Stakeholders for Retooling TB Control. It is a document that speaks on the why, the who, and the when, how to engage stakeholders, and provides us an illustrative list of global, regional, and country-level stakeholders. It also presents some case studies or examples of stakeholder engagement, such as the case study of fixed-dose combination drugs made in the Philippines and in South Africa, the artemisinin-based combination therapy for malaria in a case study in Nepal, and how the home-based management of fever in Rwanda was introduced in this country, specifically engaging community in such a country. It is also provided with simple tools for preparing a stakeholders analysis and a stakeholders engagement plan. Quite recently, there was a pretest of that stakeholder engagement matrix made in the Philippines, and particularly we tried to reach out the technical working group of the country as our initial audience or respondents in that stakeholder matrix analysis. So the participants then included sectors coming from government, private sector, NGO, and international partners. It was found out to be a useful process to engage partners, and later on, hopefully, we can plan jointly to come up on the retooling process that we're going to undertake. And it provided us also some lessons that we like to learn from, some of which include the following, that the initial set of stakeholders can be those, you know, just within the reach of the NTP, and like what the Philippine experience has done, it initially tried to reach the stakeholders within the technical working group. The tool facilitated a quick self-appraisal of the stakeholders themselves, being able to describe their potentials and limitations, and this became very helpful for us to visualize their future role later on the retooling. The tool also facilitated some kind of leveraging of the stakeholders' engagement objectives vis-a-vis their levels of influence and level of interest of commitment. It is envisaged in the future that once we try to expand our stakeholders, we would be able to see that there's going to be variations from the level of influence versus that of the level of interest, perhaps being graded from very high levels to very low levels, and very high levels of influence, but very low levels of interest or commitment. And it was also seen that the matrix was valuable to also engage opposing groups, not necessarily to be opposing to the NTP, but being able to assess how their resistance can be addressed and why such resistance arose. So these are also some of the recent publications made by the RTF, and again, these are available in the booth outside. It's composed of an advocacy packages having there the executive summary, frequently asked questions and retooling, an overview, and a postcard picture of the retooling per se. So these are the examples of such documents. It was also featured recently in the WHO weekly epidemiological record. So the next steps for the retooling focuses really on diagnostics. So globally, we can see that diagnostics will be the first new tools to be made available compared to vaccines and medicines. And the country level shows us that there are many new diagnostics being made available to countries. However, there's no systematic evaluation made for countries to assess their appropriateness. So that's now the demand of countries at this point in time. For the new diagnostics working group, they are now developing some scientific frameworks for standardizing such evaluation of new diagnostic technologies. And for the RTF, we're now working into policy framework and systems to fast-track the effective tools into policies, communicating with countries, and linking all these working groups. So if you are interested for further information about the RTF, this is our website. It is for free. Anybody can access to this for some information. So finally, the message that we just like to convey to the audience is that change is indeed coming, and we as TB communities should come up also with changes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rosalyn. Is Dr. Aguaga going to join you and add to what you've said, or if not, then I'd like to take a few minutes for comments and questions for this important activity. Please, anyone who would like to comment, if you would use the microphone and also identify yourself. I see we have a shy audience. So, again, thank you.
Okay, welcome.
Our next speaker is Dr. Catherine Floyd from the Stop TB Department, Tuberculosis Monitoring and Evaluation, who's going to talk about global progress toward TB control targets. Catherine.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to talk about progress towards the global targets for TB control. And because of the theme of this symposium, give particular attention to MDR and TB-HIV. The presentation is in three parts. I'm going to start with a reminder about what the global targets are, and then I'm going to review progress towards those targets, covering impact targets, outcome targets, targets for TB-HIV and MDR, and financial targets, and then finish with a short summary. So what are the global targets? Well, we have the impact targets, which are set within the context of the Millennium Development Goals and adopted by the Stop TB Partnership. And those are to halt and reverse incidence by 2015, that's Millennium Development Goal 6, and to halve cases and deaths by 2015, as compared with the baseline of 1990. There are then the well-known outcome targets, which are related to DOTS implementation set by the World Health Assembly, also adopted by the Stop TB Partnership, and those are to detect at least 70% of new sputum semi-positive cases and to successfully treat 85% of those cases. We then have targets related to TB-HIV and MDR, which really come from the Global Plan to Stop TB, which was launched last year in January. And the targets for TB-HIV and MDR are set within the context of achieving universal access to treatment by 2010. In this presentation, I'm just going to focus on a few of the most important targets that exist for TB-HIV and MDR. One is the percentage of TB patients that should be being tested for HIV, which should reach 85% by 2010. The second is the percentage of HIV-positive TB patients that should be started on CPT, which should reach 95% by 2010. There is a very important target in terms of enrollment of HIV-positive TB patients on antiretroviral treatment, and that should reach around 320,000 patients by 2010. And then the target for MDR-TB treatment, which is to be treating around 200,000 cases according to recommended international guidelines by 2010. We also have some financial targets, which also come from the global plan, and those are that the financial resources that should be raised for implementing TB control should be anywhere between $3.4 billion and $6.7 billion a year, depending on the year. Obviously, these resource requirements increase over time, and that's excluding research and development. So how are we doing in terms of progress towards the impact targets? Let's start with incidence. Incidence rates are currently stable or falling slowly in all regions. And this reinforces a message that was given in the equivalent symposium last year. It's more marked this time for Africa. You can see the red line for Africa. Incidence is coming down in a more pronounced way now. And then the global line in the middle, which is the black diamonds, showing that incidence is basically stable overall. It's important to note, however, that the number of cases is continuing to go up. And the latest estimate for 2006 is that there are 9 million new cases of TB. So that's up from last year, and that's mainly because of population growth in Southeast Asia. I also want to highlight that you saw on the previous slide that the highest incidence rates are in Africa, but still the vast majority of cases are in Asia. So we have 56% of cases in Asia, a lot of them in India and China. TB prevalence and mortality. Let's start with prevalence. The red line is showing the WHO estimates of what's happened to prevalence since 1990 and where it is in 2006. So you can see it's falling, but it's still quite some way from the target. If we look at mortality, the red line again is the WHO estimates for what's happening to mortality. The red line is coming down, so mortality is declining per 100,000 population. However, it's still some way above the target. And the mortality figures translate, as Mario has already said, into around 1.6 million deaths from TB in 2006. So the main message on prevalence and mortality is that they're falling, but they need to fall faster in order to achieve these quite ambitious targets of halving cases and deaths by 2015. And this brings out some regional variation. This is for deaths. You can see that the regions that are furthest off target are Africa, the Eastern Mediterranean, and Europe, and it's a similar pattern for prevalence. So those are the regions where the most progress needs to be made towards this target. What about the outcome targets? Starting with case detection, it's increasing, but currently at a slower rate than the period 2002 to 2005. Marcos has already shown the rapid acceleration in case detection that occurred during that period, largely due to massive progress in India and China, but the rate of improvement is slowing now, and our estimate for 2006 is that the case detection rate is 62%. It does vary a lot by region. However, the Western Pacific region has reached the target, and there are two other regions that are very close, Southeast Asia and the Americas, and three regions, like with the prevalence and mortality targets, that have much further to go, Eastern Mediterranean, Africa, and Europe. It's also worth comparing the latest estimate with what the global plan said should be achieved in 2006. And the global plan projection was that we should reach a case detection rate of 65% and improve to 78% by 2010. So you can see that there is considerable progress still to be made in terms of case detection. There's better news, though, for treatment success. The target has now almost been reached globally. The estimate from the latest cohort is that the treatment success rate's now 84.49%, and I put that in deliberately because we can't quite round it up to 85% yet and say the target has been achieved, but it's really almost there. If we put the case detection data and the treatment success rate data together, we can look at which of the high-burden countries are now achieving both sets of targets and have reached this so-called target zone that you've probably seen before. There are four countries there at the moment: China, Vietnam, Philippines, and Indonesia. And I've highlighted Indonesia specifically in red because it's newly moved into that target zone, reflecting major progress there over the last 5 years. Moving on then to progress towards the targets for TB-HIV, and I'm going to focus on the 41 countries that have been identified as priorities at global level and that account for about 97% of the estimated TB-HIV cases globally. And starting with HIV testing for TB patients, which is clearly an important target because this is an entry point into other interventions such as antiretroviral treatment and CPT. What you can see in the bars is that there has been considerable progress in terms of provision of HIV testing for TB patients. Although we have to bear in mind that because of the variability in the reporting of data, some of the increase that you see in these bars is due to increased reporting by countries. But certainly the improvement from 2005 to 2006 looks like a real increase in the provision of HIV testing. We can also look at what these bars mean in terms of the percentage of notified TB cases which are now being tested for HIV, and it's increased to around 11% in 2006, which is an improvement but is some way off the global target that was set in the global plan to stop TB, which was that we should be reaching around 31% overall. Nonetheless, there is considerable variation among countries, and I've included this slide just to illustrate that there is a very broad range from 1% of TB patients being tested for HIV right up to 76%. And there are three countries, Rwanda, Kenya, and Botswana, which are already demonstrating that the target is achievable. And in fact, they're ahead of the global plan target for the African region specifically. Moving on to CPT and ART, again in these 41 priority countries, you can see that provision of CPT is also increasing, although again we have some variability in the reporting of data. A high percentage of HIV-positive TB patients are being started on TB, on CPT, provided that they have accessed HIV testing. So in 2006, for example, we have 83% of those patients that are found to have HIV actually being enrolled on CPT. It's a similar picture for ART. Provision is increasing, and the percentage of HIV-positive TB patients being enrolled on ART is now around 40%. Looking forward, for ART specifically, we actually ask on the WHO annual data collection for projections for what countries are expecting to do in terms of providing ART for HIV-positive TB patients in 2007 and 2008. So this is a graph that's showing data for 15 of the 41 priority countries that provided those projections. They account for about half of the global burden of TB-HIV. And what's encouraging here is that you can see while there is a lower figure in 2006, so what's actually happening is behind global plan expectations, in 2007 and 2008, they're actually rather close. I'm now going to talk a little bit about progress towards the targets for MDR and XDR TB treatment, and starting with global progress, this is the number of patients that have been treated for MDR TB from 2004 up to projections for 2008, and broken down according to whether those patients are in GLC projects or whether they're being treated outside the GLC. And the significance of showing the GLC separately is that we know that those patients are being treated according to the international guidelines that exist for the programmatic management of MDR-TB. We're less sure about the patients in the blue bars. If we compare these numbers with the targets set in the global MDR-XDR response plan, then you can see that the target in that response plan is 69,000 patients in 2007 as compared with an actual figure if we include those patients that we're not sure what form of treatment they're receiving of around 50,000, which is not so different. But in 2008, there is a very big gap emerging between what countries are reporting to us they expect to do in terms of providing MDR-TB treatment and what are the targets set out in the response plan. There's also a lot of regional variation in terms of what the response plan expects in terms of provision of MDR-TB treatment. And what's noticeable from this figure is that there are really three regions where it's very important to scale up treatment for MDR-TB and XDR-TB: Europe, Southeast Asia, and the Western Pacific. In the case of Southeast Asia and the Western Pacific, you can also see in the bar, if you look at the yellow part and the green part, that the response plan is really expecting a lot of treatment to happen in India and China, much more than we see as the current expectations from the plans in those countries. And then in the case of Europe, we have Russia, which is already providing more MDR-TB treatment than is anticipated by the response plan, but we don't know what is the quality of that treatment. and a big deficit for the other European countries. So the main message when we look at regional variation for MDR is that at the moment, planned implementation is behind the response plan targets in the three regions where it's most needed. I'm now going to move to progress towards financial targets. And really, due to time constraints, I'm going to focus on the 22 high-burden countries that have 80% of global cases, and also specifically on 2007 and on 2008. This chart is showing funding requirements in the 22 high-burden countries as estimated in the global plan, and then as compared with the country reports that have been provided to WHO. And if we look at this chart, we can see that in the case of DOT's implementation, the global plan and what countries are planning to do are really rather well aligned. In the case of TB-HIV and advocacy, communication and social mobilization, the global plan suggests that much more funding is required than countries themselves are estimating. Although in the case of TB-HIV, you've just seen there is major progress in terms of implementation, some of the difference here is because we're not picking up the funding for TB-HIV that's flowing through HIV programs. The green part of the bars is important to highlight because it could look from this slide as though countries have more funding available for MDR-TB treatment than the response plan has indicated is needed. That's not actually the case. The reason that the green part of the bar for the country report section of the chart is so large is entirely because of the Russian Federation and South Africa. And if you took those out, you would see a major deficit in terms of the funding requirements being estimated at country level and the funding requirements which are set out in the response plan. And if we then move from estimates of resource requirements to the funding that's actually available, you can see if we just take 2008 as an example, that there is a deficit as compared with the global plan in these 22 countries of around $600 million. And if we remove that distortion that I've just spoken about for the Russian Federation and South Africa, then the funding gap is more like $1 billion in 2008. So there is considerable progress needed in terms of both planning the necessary funding for TB control and also mobilizing resources to meet those needs. Before I move to the summary of progress towards targets, I just wanted to say a few brief words about the WHO planning and budgeting tool, which Marcos actually alluded to in his presentation, because this has been developed to try to bridge the gap between the global plan and the planning and budgeting that's going on at country level. It's designed to align country-level planning and budgeting with the targets that are set out in the global plan, and we've been doing quite a lot of work in 2007, particularly with the African region, in using this tool to try and develop plans and budgets which really are aligned with the global plan targets. And we're now working with 34 countries to try and do that. We have some of the work completed, and some good examples there are Kenya, Zambia, Malawi, DR Congo, and South Africa, and quite well advanced in others, including Nigeria. So this is a tool that can help us to narrow that gap that you've seen that can exist in certain areas of TB control between the global targets and what needs to happen at country level. So finally then, a summary of progress toward targets. Incidence is stable or falling slowly. It's therefore on target. Prevalence and mortality are falling, but not fast enough. The case detection rate, the latest estimate, is 62%, and for successful treatment, it's 84.5%. For HIV testing, for CPT, and for ART, there's major progress, although there is still a need to scale up HIV testing further to improve access to other interventions, such as CPT and ART. For MDR-TB treatment, there's progress, but it's currently far short of the global plan, especially in Europe and Asia. And finally, in terms of funding, while it's increased substantially for TB control over the last 6 or 7 years, it's still not high enough. Some important acknowledgements I would like to finish with. A lot of people have really contributed to the data analysis that I've presented, and I particularly want to single out Miran Hosseini, Andrea Pantoja, Matteo Zignol, and Chris Dye, and also thank you to the 179 countries from which we've received reports this year, and to USAID, who funds a lot of the monitoring and evaluation work in WHO. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Catherine, for a very nice overview, a comprehensive overview of a mixture of very positive information and also significant challenges that we continue to face. We do have a few minutes, so if there are any comments or questions, I invite them at this time. Yes.
Last time you either didn't see my white hair or black skin. Thank you very much for the speakers that have given us some initial talk. Me as a clinician, all these targets are a myth. I see many more patients. I cannot make bacteriological identification. I put patients on treatment. I see more failures, more deaths. Now, it's like comparing we have got a cheetah, which is chasing the antelopes in front, and we, with our tools and so on, were like a tortoise coming from behind. Can the audience assure me that we can reverse so that the tortoise in the front and the leopard, which is the TB and HIV, which is chasing the community, just about to devour them? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Your slide of TB HIV indicators, the percentage of patients that are on antiretroviral therapy, you gave a percentage of 40%. But I'm thinking in my program, I thought that would depend on the CD4 count of the patients who come in, and that will also depend on how soon the patients are enrolled in the program. So in my program, what should I expect? What is good enough, or a bit more expounding on that, the percentage of patients on antiretroviral therapy among the TB patients? Thank you.
The figure that I presented is just the overall rate of enrollment on ART for people who are HIV positive. It's not to say that it should be exactly, for example, the 43% in 2006. All I could say is when the estimates were done for the global plan, the assumption was that on average, about half of HIV-positive TB patients would need to be enrolled on ART based on CD4 count data, which suggests that about 50% of patients will meet the criteria for being enrolled on ART. So, of course, in some settings, the figure could be higher depending on the stage at which people are presenting, or it could be lower. So this is just a global figure. I would expect a lot of variation with settings and among countries.
Okay. I will take two more questions in the back and then on the side, please.
Thank you. My question is that you showed a slide there of 62% detection rate based on smear positives. Now, in the era of HIV, one tends to see more and more smear negatives, even though they are TB cases. What is your take on that?
Yeah, no, that's very true. I'm just focusing in this presentation on the case detection rate for the smear positive cases, because that's the global target that exists. But we also track every year the case detection rate across all forms of TB. And across all forms, I think the latest data for 2006 is around 55%, so it's a little bit lower. But it is being looked at. It's just not one of the specific global targets that exists.
Yes. Thank you, Catherine, for a great presentation. I'm a little puzzled by what is happening in Africa. The incidence is coming down dramatically, while case detection is only a mere 50%. What could be the explanation for this?
Okay, this is a more challenging question, I would say. In response to that, it's true. The case detection rate for the African region currently looks quite low. And at the same time, yes, we're estimating, often using notification data, that incidence is starting to decrease. I think one of the things that we have recognized and started to do this year is look more carefully at some of the estimates of the case detection rate in the African region. And a prime example of this is Kenya, where if you look more closely at the data to be able to properly disentangle the effect of HIV and the effect of what program performance is doing to the case detection rate, you can find that the figures could change. So I think it's good to flag this as an issue. It means we need better estimates of the burden of TB in Africa, and we need to do some more thorough analysis of what the case detection rate is. And this is work that's now starting to happen with the Task Force on TB Impact Measurement, and it may well lead to the revision of some of those case detection rate estimates for Africa.
Okay, we'll take one more question and then move on.
Thank you, Catherine, for your very beautiful presentation. Mine is actually also to do with the case detection. I think these targets are important for countries, and the programs can work towards them. But how can countries work towards meeting these case detection rates, and especially to cascade them down so that they can know, for example, at regional level or even at a lower level, which areas are doing well and which areas are not doing well, so that they can concentrate and focus on those areas to improve on the case detection?
So I see the difficult questions are coming from Kenya. Well, we often get questions about how you can estimate case detection at subnational level, and usually we say that it's not possible to do that because you don't have precise enough estimates. Most of the estimates are therefore made at the national level. If you were able to look more closely at what's happening just in terms of the basic surveillance data at subnational level, though, it could tell you quite a lot of useful information about variability in program performance. But we usually don't try to make estimates of subnational case detection rates because there's too much uncertainty in the data.
Thank you very much, Catherine. As we've just heard, Indonesia is the most recent high-burden country to achieve the case detection and treatment success goals. And to tell the story of how that happened, I'm calling on Dr. Kamalia Basri, NTP manager of Indonesia.
I can. I'm not sure. I'm the... It's not here.
The one we just had.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, good morning, everybody. So I thank you very much for Stop TB Partnership, the union, and all partners who has invited me to give a country experience on the road to achieve TB control target in Indonesia and face up new challenge. So I'm not supposed to give a presentation on to face up new challenge, but on the second side of my presentation, if time is still with me, I will continue with this new challenge. So this is what we just look at. What Catherine presented this morning is that Indonesia is now on the box which I dream for the last 10 years to be there, the Indonesia. But then the dream is come true, but it's not the end of the work. It's the beginning of to control the disease in my country. So I will say it's a next challenge for Indonesia. And then I don't think that I will put this challenge, so it must be hand over to somebody else. So this is on the left box. You can see that the TB performance in short in Indonesia, where we can reach the case detection rate more than 70% as written down in the global target. So we reached 75%, more than 75%, with maintaining treatment success rate more than 85% actually. But TB is a leading cause among infectious disease. This is in the country and ranked third with 500,000 new cases annually, and more than 90,000 people die because of this disease in Indonesia. And HIV positive among TB patients is estimated by WHO around 0.8%, but it's not that low, because we are currently just finalized our TB HIV co-infection survey in one of the low prevalence HIV as indicated by our national AIDS program. But the figure is not below 1, even it is 2. So I believe that this figure is worth more than what estimate by the expert. So this is the DOTS history in Indonesia. We are actually starting with DOTS, quote-unquote, DOTS in the ideas, but it's not yet named as DOTS, but it's during early 1990s, KNCV introduced DOTS in Indonesia, trial in one of the island in Indonesia, and then expand to another island. Before then, the NTP Indonesia decided to adopt this strategy or these tools. At that time, it's not yet the strategy. It's the tools to control the disease in country. And after first DOTS pilots in two provinces in Indonesia, it's Jambi and East Java, as I put it in red. So I'm working there in one district in Jambi province. This is in the middle of the jungle of the Sumatra island. First DOTS trial in Indonesia, and then since then I fall in love to TB, and then working for TB for so many years. Then 1995, it's after fighting with too many experts in country, then Indonesia accepted this strategy, and then up to now it's become our strategy to control the disease in the country. So Mario, don't worry about the basic DOTS in country. We still keep on the DOTS basic in the country. And we have 2,000 intensive our HR, but before that we developed the partnership approach to control TB. So I think this is one of the important milestones in Indonesia, where we decided, my minister at the time decided to have an approach of the partnership, because he said that Carmelia, you cannot cope this to control the disease with your own shoulder. So you try to find another soldier to help you. And then the partnership is the approach in Indonesia to fight against the disease. I think it's the right decision. 2002, we have, before 2002, I mean 2000, when the minister asking me about how to control the disease in Indonesia, he asking me question, if I give you money, what is your decision to use this money? First, I will use the money for human resource development. The second, I will use for human resource development. The third is human resource development. The second is logistic. The third is monitoring and evaluation system. So that is our first money coming from partners. We use it for the human resource development. And then, of course, after we used the money for the human resource development, we have to write a plan. At the time, it's a very simple plan. I will show you later. And then when we run the plan, we realize that it's not that an easy plan. So we developed the comprehensive 5-year strategic plan. And then thank you very much for WSO at the time. Facilitate us to develop this plan. So this is our first comprehensive 5-year plan, following by our second 5-year strategic plan. It's also following the global plan and the new Stop TB strategy, facing up to new challenge now. So I still remember, Mario, 2004, we discussed about the evolution of the dots, and then it's come up with the new strategy. So this is the figure on the right box. Downstairs is the figure of Indonesia. The red line, the red box is showing our case detection, and then the blue line is showing our treatment success rate. So this is Catherine talking about finance. You can see this like a relationship between the funding available in the country with the performance. So the red line is showing that our case detection rate, why we already maintain our So the red line is showing our case detection rate, and then the gray line is showing the funding from external support coming to the country, the relation between these two. So this chart also showing the first partnership meeting in the country after we established our partnership, and then we have also the hospital dots, HRD, human resource development, stepwise training, 5-year plan, global fund support, TBCTA, SIDA, startup, global fund proposal and accepted. So in Indonesia, we have global fund for round 1 and round 5, and the calculation is around $140 million for 10 years, actually 8 years. And we also have our TB Partners Forum. We have also GTF coming to country. Thank you, Marcos, for the first GTF grant, and then we continue the GTF support to the country with the direct procurement. And we also have ISAC. I think it's intensified support for country onto doing. This is more on the technical assistance. I already explained about it. I just want to show that this is the case detection rate. Even though in country we reach 75% of case detection rate, but don't imagine that all over the country they can reach 75%. No, Indonesia is too wide. And then we have 33 provinces. We have 440 districts with variety conditions, geographically, socially, culture, and everything. So we have more than 200 tribes in the country, more than 50 languages. So it's variety between provinces. This chart only just to show you how big difference between one and other province. But on top of that, the treatment result is almost maintain around this 85%. So now we are talking about global target for TB control. It's then we moving from the output into the impact. I think everybody know about this chart. So the left side is showing that how many patients we treat every year. So in Indonesia, we can reach like close to 300,000 patients annually. It's not only sputum smear positive. Half of them is extrapulmonary and sputum smear negative. And acceleration since 2001 is after we strengthening our human resource development, we improve our TB services system through the primary healthcare system and procurement, supply management, and we also strengthening our surveillance. So increasing treatment success since 1999 reached the target of 85% by 2000 and keep maintained today. So this is indicator 23. It's about prevalence and incidence, the mortality rate. We are still working on the mortality survey in the country in collaboration with the research institute available in country and also in collaboration with WSO, supporting by our UK colleagues through the TFID funding support. This is the result of prevalence survey. And then what is specifically I want to explain in this forum is that a variety between country is we only like divided into three regions. Is Sumatra on the left side, Jawa Bali in the middle, and the eastern part of Indonesia. We can also see from the result the difference between these three areas. So the nation, if we mention about the overall result of the country, we already felt if we compare with the prevalence rate of 1990s. So we are on 2005, we already fell 42%. So instead of 50% by 2015, we are already 42%. So, and Rick, if it's time still available for me, I want to explain
a little
bit.
Okay, yes.
So I will continue my presentation with to face up the new challenge. So following the global plan, the new strategy, we also in Indonesia, we developed our second strategic plan to control TB in the disease. We call it equitable quality dots for all. We have four main strategy for expansion of TB control, and we have three supporting strategy by health system strengthening. So the first four is to pursue quality dots. I think it's just adopt from the global policy. The second is also addressing TB-HIV, MDR, TB, and the challenge involving all care providers and TB patients. Then another three supporting strategy for health system strengthening is to strengthen policy and ownership, strengthen health system and TB control management and research. So this is the strategic objective number one, to implement TB control. I think it's not much different with what yesterday Cakaya gave a presentation a little bit about the plan. Improving quality DOTS services is our program intervention, and DOTS expansion to the unreached population. It's very important. Pro-poor and vulnerable population intervention. Pediatric tuberculosis is here. And then this is what I want to explain about the strengthening TB lab network, because in Indonesia, we are the NTP. We don't have at all laboratories. So we are 100% count on our partners in country to strengthening TB laboratory network. So we established laboratory working group within the GERDUNAS. So the GERDUNAS is the Stop TB initiative in Indonesia. This is more or less like a Stop TB partnership globally. So with collaboration, we can strengthening our TB laboratory. And then this is the lab network plan for TB control program. But this is still another dream. I hope it will come true within 2 or 3 years. Strategic objective 2 is now very important. And then I put it on my top priority every day in the morning. If I open my diary, and then I put it the strategic objective 2 into my top priority, while the strategic objective 1 is already handover to another stop in our MTB. So improved case finding and management of TB-HIV co-infected patient and MDR-TB, and to develop capacity for MDR and drug-resistant tuberculosis, big, big challenge for Indonesia. So from this chart on the right side, if we mention about numbers, Indonesia is not the high prevalence of HIV if we compare to, if we make numbers, because we are 220 million population and we don't have that high number of HIV. But if we see the speed of increasing, we are number one in the region. So that is why I put it on my top priority. And thank you very much for WSO to invite me to go for training in Ethiopia, and thank you for a colleague in Ethiopia who attracted my attention to learn more about this TB-HIV. So instead of to look at the treatment success, now we have to look at the other part of the success. Even though we are now on the 91% of the treatment success, but we still have the 9%, and then we have to consider about the patient who has failed to succeed to have treatment, because this is where the drug resistance is placed. So we have this, our first drug resistance survey. We already doing this, and we are now on the testing of all the isolate. We have 1,342 isolate ready to test. And thank you very much for our colleague in NTP Thailand as our supranational reference laboratory, and we also supporting by the IMVS in Adelaide as our supranational laboratory. Then what I proposed to our colleague in IMVS in Adelaide, that 10% of isolates which have to go for quality test in IMVS Adelaide, I proposed them to doing the test for the second line drug, just to use the opportunity to look at the possibility of the second line resistance in the country. I think it's accepted, our proposal, and thank you very much for our supranational reference laboratory. DOTS Plus, we just established our DOTS Plus working group, consists of many experts, and then we asking KNCV to help give a technical assistance on the assessment of the pilot site, and then preparing the GLC application. It is one of the difficulties work. I know nothing about, so it's 100% count on what the consultant work for us. So this is TB-HIV collaboration activities in the field. We have we following our national AIDS program policy or strategy. They are starting with 25 hospitals, the top referral hospital in country. While TB program, we are starting from the very low primary health care services in the country. HIV was starting with the very top referral hospital in the country. So it's very difficult to merit between these two, because we are far. The distance is so far. But then we try, and then now we are... because we have the hospital dots now, then we following the national AIDS program policy to use the 25 hospital which have ARV services. So we entering, we prioritize the 25 hospital as a hospital dot site. And within this 25 hospital, we starting to collaborate this TB-HIV. Not only the program, but to the patient and services. On the other side, we are also improving, modify this TB-HIV services for the people who are coming to the health center. So this is, we just try in one of the high epidemic of HIV in Papua. And we also try one in Bali because they are one of the high epidemic, concentrate epidemic of HIV. So this is the last line is figure out the HIV proportion among TB patients as what I already explained before. So this is strategic objective 3, involving all care providers. It's interesting because of we know from our CAP survey during the prevalence survey that most, I think around 30 or 40 or 50% of the patients, when they got symptom, they are going to the hospital and they are going to the private practitioners. So we try hard to reach the hospital, we try hard to reach the private practitioners, and thank you very much for our colleague under leadership of Phil Hopewell and Mario to have this international standard of tuberculosis care, where is now one of the weapon of the NTP to convince to our professional colleague, especially the medical colleague, that they have to follow the Dutch strategy if they don't want to create the MDR in the country. And this is a unique strategy, engaging TB patients and affected communities to working together with us, working together with NTP. So it's now everybody can come to the NTP office, can come to my office, knock the door or call to my mobile phone, because my mobile phone is not allowed to put off 24 hours a day. So they can call me at any time, the patient, the community, whoever in the country wants to join, wants to support the NTP. And then now we have very happy to have a community of TB and community of NGOs who has helped us together to help the patient and the community itself. And we have these TB partners available around the country, but then I'm not that proud to look at the eastern part of Indonesia where the prevalence is the highest, but not partners, not many partners available. So it is on the right side of this map. This is the eastern part of Indonesia, the highest prevalence, but not many partners working there. So this is, I put it on my shoulder as a responsible for this area. I probably will move to that area and leaving the national program. Strategic objective number 5. Strengthen policy and foster local ownership. So I think it's ACSM working group is play a very big role here as a cross-cutting, as what Marcos explained this morning about the cross-cutting of this ACSM. It's now it's a new field. That is why it's very interesting to join this group, and then I learn a lot from this group and then implement into use this strategic objective number 5. And also we have this health system strengthening with the program intervention of human resource and capacity building, health and infrastructure development at all level, improving procurement and supply management system. We contribute to another program in the health system because we train them about how to PSM system setting up, and it was also advantage for other program. MIS, Management Information System, M&A, surveillance, because if you improve surveillance, you will not only think about the surveillance of TB, but you can use the system to improving surveillance for other diseases, like bird flu, for example. And research, I think we have another type of research. Now, if it's time, can I continue? Okay. So it's also an interesting thing to always, sorry Rick, because if talking about my program, I can not only 20 minutes, but 20 hours a day I can talk about, without any slide even. So this is planning and budgeting of TB program in Indonesia. So I want to explain the first line is our first comprehensive plan. If you see the yellow is what we assume budget will be coming from the central government. The red is provincial government. The green is the district government. And the violet on top is the gap. And the gap, we write proposal to partners. We have and proposal accepted by the USAID. So thank you, Irene, and all our USAID colleagues. And it's also accepted by CEDA, Canadian, and the last is it's approval by the Global Fund for round one. So it's an interesting thing to learn about. Then Global Fund is delayed for 1.5 years from our plan. Then it's luckily for us because of the district funding, which we expected and assume will be improving after 2005, it's not really coming. So with the delay disbursement of the funding from the Global Fund, we move the bulk of fund into 2005 and 2006 to fill in the gap because of the district funding is not real coming to our program. So it is like replacing the district we assume to get budget with the Global Fund money. So it's fine, it's good to implement. Then we do an evaluation because of when we realize that the district funding is not coming in reality to the national program, then we adjust the plan. We adjust the plan and then we're coming up with the second one, the second plan. That is why we have an overlap between 2006. So it's overlapping because then we adjust and we replan. And the assumption is changed because of with the second plan, you can see that the we make a reasonable change into the district plan. Then this second comprehensive plan is after calculate all the funding support expected from partners, we send the proposal to the Global Fund and all the gap is filled by the round five of the Global Fund, of the Global Plan. So this is the calculation, not many interesting. But this is the challenge, TB service delivery challenge, and then we also indicate health system challenge. Now this is the last 1 minute area specific plan because this is one of our, what is in our mind now is the area specific plan. Why? Because we already case detection rate already 75, so another 25 is the hard rock for us. So to reach the unreached in this 25 is not as easy as it is. So high prevalence TB in a remote area, commitment, partnership, partners, funding support. We don't have a shortfall in theory. How we choose the area specific plan? We are doing the strategic analysis because of different geographically, demographically, culture, social, economic, political condition, disease burden, health facility available, partners, as what I already explained, and vulnerable population. Where is this 25% going to? Where are they? Are there somebody treat them? Are there somebody taking care of them? We have to find out. And this is a big challenge for the next NTP managers. They are children, women, maternal in particular. This is my husband's business. Dual infection, TB-HIV, population under poverty line, urban poor, urban necrotic area, yesterday I explained about remote area population, prisoner and prison community, because prison community it must be also doctors around this prisoner border. So the work never be more easy. There always a new challenge to face up. We need good collaboration, but on top, we need good and nice coordination. Nice, not only good. And if you don't have enough resources, just cry for help. Don't ever fight except to the disease. Outsourcing, find the partners, find a new friend, find a new supporter, and that is what the partnership for. And we are working for the patient. Don't let patient wait and wait and wait and wait. They are already waiting for so long. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Basri, and congratulations for a tremendous accomplishment and ambitious plans for achieving even more. As you know, we are a bit behind and scheduled for a coffee break, so I would ask you to return in 15 minutes. Otherwise, we may have to avoid lunch. So. Mm-hmm.